Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the podcast today. And we've got a show that is really going to be interesting, and I know that you're going to enjoy it. We'll be talking with none other than James O'Keefe. He is with Project Veritas Action, and if you are involved in social media at all, then you have seen today he's all over the place, and Project Veritas has released yet another video, and this one is really not very good for, well, for Deborah Ross. And while it wasn't her speaking, a prominent fundraiser, a top Democrat donor named Benjamin Barber, had some very, very disparaging things to say about African Americans who vote Republican. In fact, he compared them to Nazis. And we'll be talking with James O'Keefe. He was kind enough to break us off a phone call right before he got on an airplane. So I'll have that for you here in just a few minutes. And then, of course, one of our better friends, always just delightful to talk with, Dr. Susan Roberts. She is a professor of political science at Davidson College, and we chat with her today about what we can expect in the last 6 days. You know, the election is less than a week now away on Tuesday next week, and so Dr. Roberts, as always, with some really good insights about, well, not only the presidential election, but Governor McCrory and Roy Cooper in the gubernatorial race as well. And then on Wednesdays, we like to chat briefly with Donald Bryson, state director of the North Carolina chapter of Americans for Prosperity. Find out what they've been doing. Folks, they made 100,000 phone calls in one day last week. I mean, that's just, whoa. And that's the kind of grassroots work that they do. And so we'll be talking with Donald Bryson on the show today as well. So last week, I hope that you listened to the show with Daniel Horowitz of conservativereview.com, senior editor. We were talking about what are conservatives to do. And you should really bookmark conservativereview.com, because every day Daniel has at least one, typically more than one, really insightful articles that he posts. And today he has one that is entitled, "Early Voting is Fundamentally Unfair and Undermines Fair Elections." And he really calls it into question constitutionally and as a matter of federal law, because Congress was granted the authority to set the national election day for president. And in 1845, they designated that day as the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And frankly, folks, the early voting, is it legit? I mean, it's here, probably here to stay. But read this article, if you will, because me talking about it is not going to do it the same justice as you reading. "Early voting is fundamentally unfair and undermines fair elections." And that is at conservativereview.com by Daniel Horowitz. So good read there. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Nick Oxner of WBTV, and more stuff going on down there with Cleveland County and Speaker Moore and one of his law firm associates. So we'll find out what's going on there tomorrow on the show. So you don't want to miss that. But we're going to kick things off talking with, as I said, James O'Keefe. And I was really excited to get him on the phone, because if you recall, last week he had like three just scandalous videos that he released involving Brad Woodhouse, brother of Dallas Woodhouse, who, as you know, is the executive director of the North Carolina Republican Party. And Brad Woodhouse is on the other side of the aisle, very, very active. Some would say he's the heart of some of the goings on the National Democratic Party. So real excited to be talking with James O'Keefe about the work that he does with Project Veritas Action. So without any further ado, we're going to step aside. But first, I want to remind you, as always, please engage with us on Twitter at WhatMattersNC. And you can tweet at me at Mark Shiver. And also, we're on Facebook. We'd love to have you like our page there, What Matters in North Carolina. Without any further ado, here's my conversation with James O'Keefe. Joining us now, it's our pleasure to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina, James O'Keefe of Project Veritas. Mr. O'Keefe, welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
And you're in North Carolina today. You had a press conference and a, wow, pretty startling video.
Yes, yes. We released a video at the press conference showing inside of a fundraiser for Deborah Ross, who is running against Burr in North Carolina. And by the way, Deborah Ross, just in the last 24 hours, has issued comments about some hidden audio that was obtained into Burr. Well, at her fundraiser, one of her donors and top donors to Hillary was saying that black people are seriously F-U-C-K'd in the head.
Wow.
They disagree with the politics of certain policies. Really racially inflammatory stuff. And we interviewed a bunch of African-American pastors in North Carolina, and they said that they want the money returned. They want these comments. They want Ross to respond to these comments.
Well, you know, you have done an amazing job here for a long time, but in the last several weeks, you have just been releasing, just really scandalous videos that really they're quite disturbing. And I'm sure that, as you said, the pastors in the African-American community, upon seeing and hearing this most recent video, they have to be outraged.
They're very outraged. I mean, the sincerity is palpable, because if you look at the reactions, I mean, one of the gentlemen we spoke with actually said, so that's what they think of us. And I mean, he literally paused for a few minutes. He was really hurt by the comments. I mean, but this is what we do. Veritas goes behind closed doors to expose what people really think. And whether it was Scott Fogel a couple weeks ago was on videotape saying, we have to break the law in order to win this mother effer, and we have to hire mentally ill people to go out and incite violence. This is the way the people think and feel and really believe what's actually happening. You guys' name is Civitas. My organization's name is Veritas, Latin for truth.
Yeah.
Because the only way to get to the truth is to dig deep and to pull back the curtain on our political leadership. This guy is not a dummy. This man named Barber is his name.
Benjamin Barber, yeah.
Benjamin Barber. He's given TED Talks. He's an intellectual. I'm sure that many people agree with him. And if Ross is going to go out there and say, oh, Burr is, you know, targeting Hillary at target practice, you know, fine, then all the CNN has to also report this video, because this video is exposing something far more important than even a tongue-in-cheek comment about targeting. This is about an entire racial group of people who are mentally F-U-C-K'd in the head if they don't agree with your politics. That's really something that she needs to respond to. And frankly, according to these African-American leaders, she needs to return the money.
And our guest is James O'Keefe of Project Veritas Action. And James, do you know if she has responded yet?
I can tell you that a lot has happened in the last hour. She's been on Twitter and posting headlines from yesterday to this other hidden audio. So I think her campaign is in damage control mode. As soon as ABC News and all these other outlets reach out to her, she's going to have to issue a statement. She's probably going to throw them under the bus, but what the African-American community wants her to do is return the money.
Now, this might be off the mainstream of topics for what you do, but James, you're all over the place, and you're inside a lot of places that, as your videos have shown, bringing to light things that most people, if it weren't for you, frankly, would never hear or never be exposed to. And, you know, Donald Trump recently was saying, you know, to African Americans, look, these Democrats use you guys every 4 years, and then they turn around and, you know, basically ignore you until it's time to get your vote again. And I
Right.
think that the video that you posted today really kind of pulls back the curtain on, you know, how these this particular demographic of African Americans is really thought of by these people, and it's really it's disturbing.
It's really disturbing. It's what we've suspected for a long time. Usually, I'd like to editorialize, but truthfully, this video kind of speaks for itself. I mean, you know, I could editorialize. I could talk about Margaret Sanger. I could talk about Margaret Sanger at Planned Parenthood and what she said about African-Americans. I could talk about Lyndon B. Johnson and what he said about African-Americans. I could say that. I'm sure other people will say that regarding that political party's view about black people. But the great thing about Veritas is, you know, we get right to the heart of the matter. And to see this guy compare to the Nazis, the Sonderkommandos is what he calls black people. That they are the Jews who are helping kill or helping Nazis kill other Jews. It's just inflammatory. And he's given thousands and thousands of dollars. Can you imagine, like, David Duke, you know, came out and supported Donald Trump, and everyone must wall-to-wall-to-wall media coverage revoking his support. I mean, what about this?
Yeah.
What about this comment? This comment was made in September at a fundraiser. He was at a fundraiser for this woman, Ross.
Wow.
North Carolina, the most hotly contested election in the country right now. In fact, Hillary Clinton is in North Carolina tomorrow. Barack Obama is speaking right now. So if there was any justice in our media, of course, they'd air this wall-to-wall and talk about what it means. But the media is not going to do that because this exposure is a threat to their narrative. And they don't want to show facts that interfere with narratives. But this is pretty inflammatory. And I do believe that CNN will cover this. And I believe that every local TV station in Raleigh will cover this as well.
Well, I'm looking. You mentioned Deborah Ross's Twitter feed and Josh Stein, who's running for attorney general, on Monday, was ranting about the, you know, as you brought up, the Richard Burr joking about gun owners, you know, having targets with Hillary on them. And he, you know, very self-righteously said, absolutely unacceptable on both counts. And yet I'm looking here, James, and I don't see anything from Mr. Stein regarding, you know, this Mr. Barber saying what he did about African-Americans.
No, they're probably thinking about what they can do to spin and obfuscate and deflect. Now, another interesting thing that has developed is apparently the guy who heads your Republican Party is brother with Brad Woodhouse,
yes,
the man in the video from last week.
Right.
Woodhouse. Brad Woodhouse's brother is Dallas Woodhouse. So some reporters were asking me about that today. I don't have any information about it, but I just think it's interesting. Apparently they have a brotherly rivalry or something.
Dallas Woodhouse is the executive director of the North Carolina Republican Party, and his brother, Brad, is very active in the Democrat Party. And
he is not just active. He's the heart and soul. He was close with Bob Creamer.
Yeah.
And he had to fire. Brad Woodhouse had to fire Scott Fogel.
Yeah.
So this has a North Carolina, but this is very Shakespearean for two reasons. First reason is that Deborah Ross was literally featuring hidden camera videos from yesterday, or hidden audio. And now, all the media that were trumpeting, I mean, Charlotte Observer, all these newspapers, front page, they hear front page there with a target, they are going to have to cover this video, mark my words. They have to. They have to. Just like Donald Trump said, grab them by the vagina, and then all the media had to cover our hidden camera videos. Now the local media in North Carolina. The second reason it's Shakespearean is because Brad Woodhouse is brothers with Dallas Woodhouse, and I know that I've been asked by reporters, why hasn't Dallas hasn't even heard about these videos, and I speculated that the reason why is because he's trying to protect his brother. So now that this is hitting real close to home, it might be interesting to see what the Republican Party, what they do, if anything, about these videos. There's one that just came out today.
Well, I know that there's quite a stir here in the state about this, and that's why I was so eager to be able to speak with you, and I appreciate you taking time. I want to ask you, James, do you feel at all threatened, you know, in your own personal safety?
Say that question again.
Do you ever feel, you know, like nervous about your own personal safety or threatened because you are, you know, bringing to light some of these just horrific things?
Do I feel threatened? I have good. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I have a good security at Veritas. We have taken appropriate precautions. We've got a secure location. We're very careful about what we do and how we do it. We don't run afoul of any laws, and we're very prepared to deal with reactions to what we do, both physically, with IT, with our building. We have a lot of precautions taken. And we had some really good people at the press conference today, securing the location, and some local detectives who are helping as well. So we're in good shape there. And no, I don't think about it very often, because I think what we're doing needs to be done in a democracy. You need to have journalism. You need to have investigative reporting. And the problem with modern journalism is that it can't possibly get to the bottom of things, because journalists have cozied up with these political consultants and cozied up with the people they're supposed to be investigating. So we have to kind of go in there and sort of expose it.
I know you're short on time, but I got to ask you this. Why do you think, James, that the African-American community continues to support, year after year after decade, the Democratic Party, when they really haven't gotten anything as a community out of doing that? And now it's coming out where not only they're taken for granted, but they're horribly compared to Jews that would turn on their fellow Jews to be killed. And when are they? Do you think this demographic group, this group of people, are finally going to wake up someday and say, "Hey, wait a minute"?
I don't know. Maybe the days are numbered. Maybe I think it's just like the same. It's the same analogy I use with the American people. I think the power of free people, given information about the world around them, they can make the best decisions. So as soon as people get this type of information, as soon as people understand what people really think, in the video, one of the guys said, so that's what they really think about me. I mean, it's powerful. It's riveting. I mean, it's unbelievable to watch the reaction. So my response to you is, why is this the way it is? The reason why things are so broken in our society is because people don't know the extent of how bad things are. And if I can expose it, if I can effectively go in there with hidden cameras and show people the way things really are, then people's perceptions change, things change, policies change. And as far as the black community is concerned, if they could see and hear the way these politicians patronize them and talk about them, and that they would change the way they vote, because they would understand what people like Barbara is saying. It's just deplorable, disgusting to compare them to the Nazi era. I guarantee you there's more out there like that. If you go to the Newark, New Jersey, where I'm from, the charter school community, public schools, the way they talk about black people, you're going to see the same type of thing happen. You're going to see people's minds change.
Well, James O'Keefe, you are doing work that apparently nobody else is willing to do, and for that we appreciate it. We appreciate the spotlight that you are shining behind the scenes on some things that, if it weren't for you, frankly, nobody would know about. So the work you're doing is important, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate you being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you very much.
And make sure to get the word out, and hopefully there'll be some more reactions here in the next few hours.
Yeah, we absolutely will do so. Thank you very much, sir. James O'Keefe joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina. And he mentioned, by the way, that there's been some reaction among the African-American community. And I want to play for you just a quick soundbite from Pamela Wooden. Now, she is known as the First Lady of the Upper Room Church of God in Christ. And so let's hear what First Lady Wooden has to say.
To see those accusations and to hear that type of discussion is insulting to me as an African-American.
Well, that's to put it mildly. And you need to watch this video. It's all over the place. You can go to the Facebook page of Project Veritas Action. You can just Google Benjamin Barber, and the YouTube video is one of the first hits that comes up on that search. But we appreciate James O'Keefe joining us on the program. We appreciate the work that Project Veritas Action is doing. And you know what? Like he said, the media needs to report this. Of course, they probably won't, but this is crazy that Benjamin Barber would make that kind of horrendous accusation or statement, commentary. It's deplorable and it's offensive, and we appreciate the work that James O'Keefe is doing to get this sort of thing out of the shadows and into the light. So glad he was our guest today here on What Matters in North Carolina. We are going to take a brief time out and come back and talk with our good friend, Dr. Susan Roberts. Stay tuned.
Are you a gun guy? Are you a gun girl? Do you know the difference between a clip and a magazine? Have you gotten into more arguments about 9mm, 40, and 45 than you care to admit? Then you need to go over to the Freedom Action Network and check out the NC Gun Dad Show, where we talk about guns, gear, accessories, and a whole lot more every week. I'm Matt Calder, and I was just another gun guy until the birth of my daughter. Then I became the NC Gun Dad. Join us weekly for a new episode of the NC Gun Dad Show, uploaded every Friday at www.freedomactionnetwork.com, and then click on the NC Gun Dad Show.
It's always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, good friend of the program and very, very interesting, talking about all things politics, Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So are you ready for the time change this weekend? Going to set your clock back and all of a sudden it'll be dark early?
Well, it's one less hour of election coverage. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Well, you know, I was thinking people going to be in the dark. Of course, this happens every 4 years, but it'd be nice if they had a little bit more, you know, light to stand in line in. I'm sure there are going to be long lines on Tuesday.
Well, I've told people that say, oh, I like to vote on Election Day. I like the symbolism. And I said to them, do you have 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours? And I always vote early. I just, you know, I think anything can come up. And, you know, a presidential election, I don't know about, I can't remember last year. There are long lines. There are a lot of people that come out just on Election Day.
Yeah. So what's interesting, and I'm kind of chasing a rabbit here, but we went and voted. We live in Knightdale, which is outside of Raleigh, and the polling place there, Dr. Roberts, was just packed. I mean, this huge line all the way down the sidewalk, out to the road.
Wow.
And 5 miles up the road in the town of Wendell, there was no one. And I had seen on social media where someone had mentioned there was no one. So instead of standing in that line, we just, you know, took 10 minutes, drove up to Wendell, and literally got out of the car, walked in, voted, and went back home. So it's interesting how these different early voting places are, some are busy and some are not.
Well, and I've heard around here that early voting is in Cornelius, and that everyone I know that's gone has had no line at all, been pretty empty. Some walked straight in. Now, I went, you know, I went the first day of early voting, and still, I mean, there was a line, but I got through in 3 minutes, you know, at best. And so I don't know. The numbers are still pretty heavy for turnout. But,
yes, they are.
But the profile has changed a little bit. It's still, at least the last thing that I'd seen yesterday, the Democrats are still voting earlier than the Republicans. But it's just not clear if it's going to be the same kind of demographic split. They really can't tell that yet. And this election, can you tell by partisanship necessarily where someone's going to vote? And I think that's also something we need to keep in mind.
Our guest, Dr. Susan Roberts. Always a pleasure to talk politics with Dr. Roberts. And, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I think that when all of the dust settles, when it's all said and done, I don't think that the results from a demographic standpoint are going to really be all that different than what we've seen in the past. I know this election process has been different, but I think at the end of the day, people are going to be scratching their heads and saying, well, gee, that's not very different.
Well, I think for the Democrats, the profile in 2008 of heavy African-American turnout, heavy millennial turnout, I don't think that, and that waned again in 2012, and I don't think the turnout among millennials or perhaps African-Americans, and I'm going to go out on a limb here too, I don't think it'll mirror 2008. I just don't think, and I don't mean to be a heretic, but I just don't think the momentum for electing the first woman president is the same as electing the first African-American president. I just don't see that energy there.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, Dr. Roberts. And, you know, you mentioned 2008 and millennials. A lot of the thing that gets overlooked and in that particular election, and I really, if you look at the numbers, I don't think African-Americans did much different than what they traditionally do. They vote for the Democrat candidate. So I'm not sure if there was this overwhelming sense of, you know, Barack Obama will be the first African-American. But and I'm sure that did play into the minds of some people. But my point is there were a lot of young people who voted in 2008 and obviously voted for what is now President Obama. And do you think that I've read and talked with different millennials, and they just don't seem to be impressed by either candidate. At the end of the day, what do you think we're going to see with that demographic?
Well, you know, I'm preaching to the choir when I ask my students in political science classes if they voted, because they have. But I have a number of individuals that were Cruz supporters, and they're pretty turned off about the whole thing. I believe they're going to vote, but I believe that they're going to vote for Trump fairly reluctantly. I think, you know, last time around, 2012, 2008, there are people that, you know, young people, millennials, who were so turned on by the message of Bernie Sanders, I would predict some of those will just stay home, because I don't think they found his endorsement of Hillary Clinton to be that, they found it to be somewhat disingenuous and lukewarm. And I think it wasn't fast in coming, his, you know, enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, because I think one of our very first conversations that we had, I was talking about, you know, these millennials like the Sanders message, the people that went for Sanders in the primary. The content of the message may not have been all that appealing at the end of the day, but the fact was he had a message. On the other side, Donald Trump had his message of, you know, let's make America great again. But in none of the other Republican candidates in the primary, nor with Ms. Clinton, has there been this, you know, this overarching message. And so I think that the millennials are just kind of were attracted to that, as you say, in the Bernie Sanders when he was in the primary. But now there's nothing for them really to latch on to.
Well, and I think that they didn't. I mean, I hate to. I don't think there was there wasn't the message for the millennials of how do you achieve this. I just think they liked the ideas, and I don't think that they paid a lot of attention to the fact that Bernie Sanders, by all accounts, had not been a very effective senator in when he was in Congress or in when he was in the Senate or in the House. And I think that didn't really matter, the implementation. And I think with Donald Trump, I think you have people that are more devoted to him, his base, and not establishment Republicans, but his base is very enthusiastic. And I think in North Carolina, I don't remember the figures, but he led in the enthusiasm gap. I believe it was North Carolina. I know it is nationwide. It wasn't by huge margins, but you need that enthusiasm, because at the end of the day, it doesn't take a political scientist to tell you it's turnout. And if you're more enthusiastic to go out, then you're going to vote. And if you're ambivalent about both candidates, or you think both are untrustworthy, which this day and age, this is, you know, that's one thing they have in common. And you're less inclined to vote.
Yeah.
I want to point out one thing before I forget, and this may have no impact whatsoever. This is the first presidential election in which we do not have straight ticket voting. Now, I don't know what that's going to do down ballot. I would expect there'd be ballot drop-off, regardless. But this is, you know, I'm curious to see how we can figure that out.
Yes, you bring up an excellent point. And when we early voted, by the way, the ballot that we filled out here in Wake County was like, oh my goodness, how many times am I going to have to try to fill in these little circles? It's quite the lengthy ballot.
It really is, and sometimes people, when they get down ballot, if they just don't know anything, they will leave it blank, or they will go by some odd cue. They may say, well, okay, I'm just going to vote for every candidate that's a woman, or I'm going to vote for a candidate, you know, the first candidate or the last candidate on that ballot. People ask me sometimes, what about this judicial race? What about that? And I never, it's not my place to tell anyone whom to vote for. And I just say, I think you need to go do some homework.
So have you come up with a good final exam question about this election yet? Or are you still working through that for your students?
Still working on it. Today my class has, and Wednesday my presidency class, They have been doing polling in 11 of the battleground states. So they're doing presentations today, and they're going to make some predictions. So I'm really excited. That starts at 11:30, and I'm just going to see. I'm curious about what they're going to say. And they've had to respond. Every detail has had to respond to the polls a day or two after an event, a day or two after a debate, a day or two after, you know, comments, a day or two after. I think they have time now to digest the email controversy since Friday. So I'm anxious to see how the polling numbers for those states has come out and any predictions that they might have. So I'm looking forward to class today.
Oh, absolutely. Sounds like it's going to be a ball. So let's talk about the email in briefly, Dr. Roberts. We, you know, this bombshell, this October surprise, it came out on Friday. And James Comey, you know, okay, we're going to alert Congress that there's something else here. It really has sort of kind of not been any big follow-up. I mean, you know, the traditional social media that we've been seeing of all these, you know, scandalous big headlines. But really, we're running out of time before anything else can come out of that. And so do you think that at the end of the day, unless there's, you know, in the next 6 days, some, you know, huge bombshell, you think at the end of the day the email is going to have, or that story on Friday is going to have that much effect?
The only thing that story has done, I believe, is ramp up the negative ads, because Hillary Clinton, as people have said, had tried to go more positive, and now, we're in North Carolina. The ads are fast and furious, and they've gotten a lot more negative.
Yes.
And I think that's what's going to happen. That's going to be an impact, because they've got to turn out those voters. The people that have voted, the diehards, have already placed their votes. There's a lot of incentive to get that early vote. I don't know. Some of the polls have been, all the polls have been tight, but I just saw, and I hadn't seen it yesterday, because, you know, we just can't live and breathe. We have other things to do in our lives. The WRAL poll that really showed a huge bump for Donald Trump, and I'm interested in finding more about that, because I think they had up 7%. Have you seen that poll?
I have not. I've seen.
I mean, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. In fact, I was going to ask you. Elon University released their final poll before the election, and here in North Carolina, it's a dead heat. It's, I mean, it's almost identical. They have Hillary at 42 and Donald Trump at 41.2.
Yeah.
So,
and that's a reputable poll. I respect the people that do that poll, and you know, almost just neck and neck. I get 44, rounding everything off. And I don't think the last poll they did was quite a while ago, and I think they down ballot. I can't remember, but I think there was an edge down ballot in that poll. I think there was an edge to the incumbents, to McCrory and to Burr. I don't have it in front of me, but I think there was a slight edge for the incumbents.
Well, in the state elections, and I'm glad you brought that up. They have Cooper at 44.4, McCrory 44.3. So that's about as tight as you can get right there.
Yeah, and I think that, I think that most people look at that race as the one on which they'll decide some of the issues. I mean, Pat McCrory did not write HB2, but he is the face of that, and he's going to be blamed, or he's going to be held accountable for that in terms of not just civil liberties and social justice, the people that are concerned with that, but the people that really think it's hurt the state in terms of reputation and economic impact.
Well, I think that we may have talked about this before, but I think that while many people have been displaced, and certainly there's nothing good to come out of a tragic event like Hurricane Matthew, I think that being able to be governor and be, you know, in front of people on the television regarding updates about what the state is doing and all of that. And personally, I think the way he has handled the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew has been excellent. So if there's any bump to come from anything in the last month, I think his handling of the aftermath of the hurricane has helped Governor McCrory.
Well, I believe it has as well. And with Pat McCrory, and I don't know Pat that well, but I worked on him with the show here, Flashpoint, many times. It was genuine. He, you know, even if you want to say it was a political bump, that's who he is. He, you know, he loves the state of North Carolina, and it wasn't, he didn't manipulate it. He did mention it at the first of the last debate in some detail, but I believe that was genuine, too. I don't think he has, and I may be wrong, I don't see that he has exploited it
no.
in any way. It is a true disaster.
Well, in, the other Elon interesting poll result, Dr. Roberts, was U.S. Senate, Richard Burr, 43.5, Deborah Ross, 39.9. Looks like in their poll, anyway, he is pulled away. For a long time, that race was also neck and neck.
It was. I think that they've been able to, the Burr campaign or the, you know, the super PACs have really driven home the message about Ross and the association with the American Civil Liberties Union. And I think that has, those have been headlines, no matter what the details are, that have been effective. Richard Burr made an unfortunate comment about going into a gun store and not seeing, you know, Hillary Clinton's picture on a magazine with a bullseye. That's too late. I mean,
yeah.
That's not going to affect anyone, whether they go out or not. And I think he gave a straight up apology. He didn't say, "I'm sorry if I offended anyone." He said, "I'm sorry, those comments were inappropriate." So, you know, I think that Richard Burr, even though he hasn't been very visible as a candidate, she's done real well in terms of increasing her name recognition. It just may not be enough. I mean, I think there's still people that, you know that they'll still, even in the day that we have anti-establishment, still kind of trust some incumbents. I mean, not every incumbent is evil.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. North Carolina is really a mixed bag, as you know, Dr. Roberts. The people will vote one way for president and then another way for locally. And I wrote a little over a year or so ago some a study that I did, and one of the conclusions was that several professors like yourself told me was that, you know, this is a state like a lot of southern states where people who may be voting Republican for president, they're still good old Southern Democrats, and they vote for the top of the ticket, you know, maybe Republican, because the national party platform has, you know, gotten astray from what they hold as, you know, their core set of values, but they still, in state races, will often vote Democrat because they feel like, you know, the state party is a little bit more in line with what they, you know, they're not as radical, so to speak, as the national party. Do you find that still to be true, or do you think that's, you know, with all the influx of people into North Carolina, that might not be something that is as reliable?
Well, I think it is true. You know, I don't know if I pointed this out. I'm a native North Carolinian, and so I've lived. I'm not just someone that looks at the numbers, nor am I one of those 42% of people that were not born in North Carolina. I think that there are the demographics in terms of rural, urban, and suburban that have followed some of the same patterns. And, you know, you have the eastern part of the state and the western part of the state, and you have what people have called the great state of Mecklenburg. And there are a lot of voting differences with those three regions, with the bookends of the conservative Republicans.
Well, one last question, and I'm not going to ask you to predict a winner, but I would like to ask, I've been talking with people and rolling this question out just to get a variety of different answers, but let me set it up by saying that a lot of conservatives have felt that they really don't have a spot here at the table because Donald Trump is not really their guy as far as, you know, being a true conservative. Perhaps Ted Cruz was a little bit more in line with that. But when the conservative part of the Republican Party look at the way that things have gone in Congress, and right or wrong, this continuing resolution for the budget was passed, which, you know, the Republicans are in the majority, and yet none of the things that are important to conservatives were dealt with. You know, they funded Planned Parenthood and President Obama's transgender edict and his DACA immigration edict. And so a lot of conservatives are saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, the Republicans are in the majority here, and yet there's no adherence to or respect for a conservative, you know, mindset. So my question is, what are conservatives going to find themselves doing or looking for after this election, regardless of who wins? It seems to me that they're almost a group without a party anymore.
Well, I think one of the things that people are not talking about is the Republicans at the state level, the state houses, are doing quite well. And that's what's curious about the Republicans in Washington. And I think that the Congress has, in the House, the Tea Party Caucus, the Freedom Caucus, there are a lot of very disenchanted members in Congress themselves, whether or not they can have influence. If they're going to, quote-unquote, primary a Republican incumbent, they've got to wait 2 years to do that.
Well, we will certainly look forward to getting together with you, Dr. Roberts, after the election. Your input, as far as I'm concerned, is second to none, and you're a great guest, and we certainly appreciate you joining us once again here on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure.
Are you a gun guy? Are you a gun girl? Do you know the difference between a clip and a magazine? Have you gotten into more arguments about 9mm, 40, and 45 than you care to admit? Then you need to go over to the Freedom Action Network and check out the NC Gun Dad Show, where we talk about guns, gear, accessories, and a whole lot more every week. I'm Matt Calder, and I was just another gun guy until the birth of my daughter. Then I became the NC Gun Dad. Join us weekly for a new episode of the NC Gun Dad Show, uploaded every Friday at www.freedomactionnetwork.com, and then click on the NC Gun Dad Show.
And once again, welcoming to What Matters in North Carolina, Donald Bryson. He is the president of the North Carolina Chapter of Americans for Prosperity. And Donald, welcome back. I'm sure you have been extremely busy in the past couple of weeks.
Been pretty busy, yeah. Really driving our grassroots activists and staff, trying to get out there and just talk to as many people on the phones and at the doors as we can. That's been our primary focus since in-person early voting started.
Well, have you been getting good response from people that you're encountering and talking to?
Yeah, right now, you know, our goal is to activate and motivate people to be part of the public policy process. And so right now, we're talking to people that we believe are conservatives and agree with us on the issues. They just don't vote that often. We want to make sure that they get out and vote and become active. And so, we're getting a pretty good response from people. They agree with us, and it's we're just trying to urge them to get out and vote this year.
Well, we've seen a lot of television advertising, and I, for one, am tired of it. But there's such a contrast between, for example, Senator Richard Burr and Deborah Ross, who's trying to unseat him. And I think we talked last week or a couple of weeks ago about the debate that they had, and she was really just fumbling and stumbling over her words. She doesn't seem to me to be a very confident candidate.
She wasn't particularly confident in that debate. I think generally people who know her and have seen her at the North Carolina General Assembly were surprised by her performance in that debate, because she's known to be a pretty hard-nosed speaker, someone who's used to sort of that type of debate format, but she just didn't do very well on that debate. And now as far as, you know, how confident of a candidate she is, I think she and Roy Cooper probably have the same problem in that they just don't have a very large playbook. They've got Obamacare, and they want to talk about House Bill 2, and that's really all they've got.
Yeah.
and so, it's hard to have confidence when you're not really running on much else other than we don't really like the other guy.
Yeah, it really is kind of a empty in terms of real issues that Roy Cooper and Deborah Ross are bringing to the table. I think, you know, and we've already talked about this, but you saying that puts me in mind of the governor's debate where, you know, Roy Cooper, all he could say was HB2, HB2, and you know, it's like, okay, do you have anything here? You know what I mean? Is there any substance at all that we're going to get from you guys?
That's right. And, that's really all they have. You know, Roy Cooper did say in the last gubernatorial debate, and he actually said in the first one, too, talking about Governor McCrory, well, that's all he can talk about. It's House Bill 2 and social issues. But if you look, I think Roy Cooper's latest ad is actually on House Bill 2. And that's really all he's got. He wants to talk about teacher pay, and he wants to talk about House Bill 2. But other than that, I think he's largely failed to outline what his vision is for North Carolina and where he wants to lead the state, other than I'm not Pat McCrory, and I think I can do it better than Pat McCrory. Oh, by the way, House Bill 2 is bad.
Oh, boy. Donald Bryson is our guest. He's with Americans for Prosperity here in North Carolina. You know, I am surprised at these polls, Donald, because, you know, I went to school in South Carolina, so I'm really not all that smart, but I got good sense enough to know that the state is doing extremely well. And yet, you know, this governor's race is neck and neck, which means to me that people are planning, in spite of all of the great success that the state is having economically, 300,000 plus net new jobs in the last several years. I mean, what in the world is, you know, people going into the polls thinking, well, I want my taxes to go up, by golly. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense.
You know, I think that's right. Unfortunately, for a lot of people, I think Hurricane Matthew really reset the board on a lot of those things, because there was a good bit of the year where issues that AST focuses on, which are, you know, primarily fiscal and regulatory issues, just weren't being heard because they were being drowned out by the drive-by media on House Bill 2. But Hurricane Matthew sort of reset the bar where people started, you know, thinking about those pocketbook issues again. Obviously don't wish ill on anybody, and you know, it's just horrific what the hurricane did, but it really did change the tone of at least very much the governor's debate in North Carolina. And people are like, well, you know, maybe this, you know, being fiscally responsible and having a reserve fund is a big deal. And Roy Cooper was opposed to that. You know, maybe we wouldn't have been able to come out of that had we just been spending money and not lowered some taxes.
Yeah.
And you can see that starting to be reflected in the polls, where I think there was a WRAL and Survey USA poll yesterday that came out that only had Roy Cooper up 1 point, where he had been up like 6 or 7 in the past. And then an Elon University poll had it at a tie, 44%, 44%.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty interesting. But it's coming down to it, you know. I guess, as you know, we have less than a week away now. And a couple of things that I find remarkable, particularly Deborah Ross, you know, heard a commercial about her, you know, Obamacare's, you know, she would have voted for it in spite of all the mess that it is. And then saying that Hillary Clinton is trustworthy. I think at the end of the day, she probably wishes she could have some of those words back.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people in every campaign this cycle that wishes they could have some words back. That's definitely true. But I think the ones that probably damaged Deborah Ross the most were in the televised Senate debate, where she was asked if she would have voted for Obamacare in 2009 if she had been in the Senate. She said, yes, I would have. And I think that is a telltale sign to North Carolinians about where Deborah Ross is as far as what would be good for North Carolina. We're in our fifth consecutive year of double-digit premiums within our double-digit premium increases in the state.
Wow.
We've got another 250,000 people that are about to lose their plans because Aetna and Cigna are pulling out of most of the counties within the state and just going into 5 counties. So those people are going to have their coverage disrupted, and they're going to have to find a plan somewhere else, probably with Blue Cross Blue Shield. And we still have 475,000 people from 2 years ago that were told if they liked their plan, they liked their doctor, they could keep it. That turned out to not be true, and there was an executive order that it allowed them to extend their plans for 2 years. But you know what? That executive order runs out in December, and those people are going to have to find new plans after that.
You know, it's interesting, and our guest, Donald Bryson, with Americans for Prosperity here in North Carolina. What's interesting is that as you said, the carriers are pulling out of North Carolina. There's really going to be, I think, maybe one or two small carriers that may offer a limited offering, but really Blue Cross and Blue Shield is going to be the only game in town for people that want to participate in, you know, Obamacare. And so there's no competition to drive prices down. And on top of that, the insurance companies, Donald, they're owed by the federal government an enormous sum of money at this point. So it hasn't been, you know, a bed of roses for them either.
No, it definitely hasn't been a bed of roses for them. And they, you know, they don't want the press of having to say, hey, we're going to have to increase our premiums on this. That's just bad press for the insurance company. It's not anything they want. But when you require everybody to have insurance, then that means that you've removed risk from an insurance pool, which insurance is all about risk. And once you remove the risk, there's no way of being able to accurately account for what the cost will be when people start all claiming health coverage and claiming health care on that coverage. And so they're having to make up for that cost. These are for profit companies, and so they shouldn't be faulted for having to make up for losses.
Well, I tell you what, the way they raise their premiums, you know they've got to be making money somewhere, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield in particular, and we won't really go down this rabbit trail, but they have historically made a lot of money, and that's certainly what they're in business to do. But I think if they had an opportunity, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think they'd like to distance themselves from Obamacare at some point, which, again, when you look at Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, through the lens of the rate increases that you mentioned, the way the insurance providers, the insurance companies are, just really pulling out and finding this not to be a positive thing for them to be involved with, for Deborah Ross to say, oh, yeah, I voted for that again, really, come on.
Yeah, it's very difficult to find people that the Affordable Care Act has been affordable for. I think that it probably has been affordable for some people, and I think it probably has helped, people have benefited where they can't be denied coverage due to pre-existing conditions and things like that. But, again, that was something that the state of North Carolina fixed themselves back in 1996.
That's right.
Of North Carolina didn't need to do that. And so what you have with Obamacare, unfortunately, it's just a giant shell game where, states were nearly forced, and it turns out the courts overturned that and said they couldn't force states to expand Medicaid. But what they were trying to do is expand Medicaid so that more people are on, basically federal welfare for health insurance. In order to pay for that, Obamacare cut $716 billion from Medicare, which is already a government health care program that's in need of reform, and the way you reform it is not immediately cut $716 billion from it, and all of that just to get people off of the exchanges so they wouldn't have to subsidize as many people on the exchanges. But it turns out even that didn't work because Blue Cross Blue Shield is having to increase their premiums to pay for the increased subsidies on the exchanges.
Donald, you guys really, I say this just about every time you come on because I'm so impressed with the work that Americans for Prosperity does. And looking at some of the social media you guys put out, Monday you have a headline here below a picture that says, AFP calls 100,000 voters in one day to defeat Deborah Ross. That's incredible. I mean, that is an amazing number that you guys could do that in one day.
We sure did. We called in a lot of help from our volunteers and staff across North Carolina and had a few other states who are joining in our critical effort in North Carolina. Because, make no mistake, North Carolina is the bellwether state for this election in a lot of different ways.
Wow.
But we were able to pound out 100,000 calls in one day. Since September 7th, when we started our ground game against Deborah Ross, we've made more than 800,000 calls in North Carolina and knocked on more than 100,000 doors.
Well, that's quite a lot.
It's a pile.
So in terms of Attorney General Roy Cooper, you guys are also working to bring awareness to people on some of the things that characterize his tenure of Attorney General. And one of the leading things I know is the fact that he just refuses to defend the state. And that's really sad when you have a guy who's taken an oath of office, been elected to do a job and just refuses to do it.
Yeah, you have one job, Roy Cooper. You have one job. That's to defend the state, and he's not doing that. One issue that we focused on a lot, and there are a lot of examples of him not defending the state that I won't go into, but we got really involved when the Obama administration put out new regulations for power plants
right
through the EPA. The Obama administration calls it the Clean Power Plan. And 27 states have joined in that lawsuit, in a lawsuit called West Virginia et al. Versus the EPA. That was just recently heard in front of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And of the 27 states, North Carolina is one of them, but we are the only one of those 27 states that are not represented by our Attorney General, because he's doubled down. He has sent a public open letter to the General Assembly last year saying that they should just go ahead and go along and submit a plan to go along with the Obama administration's new power plant regulations. But, you know, the best analysis in the business shows that that's going to, when that plan's fully implemented, the average utility cost between electricity and natural gas for the average North Carolina household is going to go up by about $434 a year. It's going to kill tens of thousands of jobs, going to kill hundreds of thousands of jobs nationally. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce did a study that said that one-fifth of all job losses that will come due to the Clean Power Plan will come in the mid-Atlantic states.
Wow.
Well, guess what? That's where we are.
Yeah, that's us.
And yet the Attorney General is just sitting there and saying, yep, let's go along with my cronies and the Obama administration, and he just didn't represent the state in that lawsuit.
Well, in terms of the next few days, we've got less than a week now, Donald. Are you guys going to be, you know, active right up to Election Day, or are you winding down?
Oh, no, we're not winding down. You don't jog through the finish line. You sprint through the finish line.
There you go.
And that's exactly what we're doing. We're turning on the jets right now to go even faster and harder and talk to as many people as we possibly can between now and Election Day.
Well, as always, your work is good, it's impressive, and it's a pleasure to talk to you as you give leadership to the most effective and most active grassroots organization in North Carolina. Donald Bryson, thank you as always for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thanks as always for having me on.
All right. Have a good day. Well, there's Donald Bryson, and we appreciate him. And, of course, Dr. Susan Roberts and James O'Keefe started us off today with our interviews. If you missed any of that, certainly you can download the show, listen to it at your leisure. FreedomActionNetwork.com is the website. You can also find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Why not just download the phone to your download the show to your phone every day, or to your tablet or your PC? You can do that at either of those places. You can do it from the website, FreedomActionNetwork.com. Be sure to tell your friends and their family. I'm sure that they would enjoy listening to our interview with James O'Keefe and finding out what Benjamin Barber had to say. And again, this is a big deal. This is not like, you know, me at a fundraiser, you know, a barbecue or something. This is a significant top Democrat donor saying things that are just deplorable about African Americans who support Republicans. And we heard First Lady Wooden from the Upper Room Church of God in Christ talk about how offensive those comments are. So thanks for listening to the program today. Tomorrow, we will, of course, talk with Nick Oxner, our buddy from WBTV in Charlotte, always doing yeoman's work, getting out there and nosing around. And people don't like to see him coming, folks. But anyway, we'll find out what he's into. And Dr. Bob Lupke, education policy analyst from the Civitas Institute. Look forward to talking to him. And perhaps he and I will be celebrating a Cubs World Series win tonight or tomorrow's show, or maybe we'll just not be very happy. But anyway, thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We certainly do appreciate it, and we will talk to you tomorrow.